if you're unsure of when you're going to have a high prevalence. So that might also help you is to do some preliminary testing to determine like when am I seeing the most of this? Because I think that's another reason why people can be unsuccessful is they might go in an early nursery peg looking for synoviae, but in reality, there's a very, very low prevalence then. So it's going to be really hard to find. So I might want to do some maybe oral fluids or some preliminary testing just to see where those PCR positives are before I go and try to grow it, right? So I have my highest success rate. So kind of combining your clinical signs of your lameness and or your polycyrrhitis in the case of the hyorrhinus, and then also just when that peak prevalence is, so then you have your best shot at getting it.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Hi-D is a pure, effective 25-hydroxy-D3 solution to help pigs improve their vitamin D status. Improve bone health and lifetime productivity with Hi-D. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/hy-d. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Better production performance starts with Eastman Choline Chloride. Visit eastman.com. Healthier pigs are good for producers, people, profits, and planet. The National Pork Board is committed to improving the health of the U.S. swine herd. Learn more at porkcheckoff.org.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Swine It podcast. I'm Dr. Tara Donovan, your host, and today I have two guests on my show. First, let me introduce Dr. Deb Murray. Deb is the Veterinary Services Manager at New Fashion Pork in Jackson, Minnesota. And I also have a returning guest, Dr. Steve Tusina. Steve is the Director of the Swine Business Unit with Vaccinova. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So today we're going to discuss Mycoplasma hyorrhinus and Mycoplasma hyosynoviae, how to diagnose, manage, and treat the disease in your herd. But before we jump into that, let's have our guests introduce themselves a little bit more for you. Deb, go ahead.
Hi there. So as Dr. Donovan mentioned, I'm Deb Murray. I work for New Fashion Pork in Jackson, Minnesota. And if you're not familiar with the company, we're about 60,000 sows, and then we would market about 1.2 to 1.4 million pigs a year. So I graduated from the University of Minnesota College of Vet Med in 2006. I also went to undergrad in Minnesota, briefly left Minnesota for about a year, and then came right back to work for New Fashion Pork. So I did mixed animal for that 1 year and then back into pigs. So that's me.
Steve's the returning guest, but in case you hadn't tuned into one of those episodes, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Yeah, thanks again for having us. Steve Tusina, and I'm the director of the Swine Business Unit at Vaccinova. So responsible for a team of people that work with pig farms across the U.S. and Canada in developing autogenous vaccine programs. My background is veterinary medicine at the University of Minnesota and a PhD in epidemiology. And most recently now with Vaccinova for the last 4 years. So look forward to the discussion.
Great. Absolutely. So to start us off, Deb, will you give us just a bit of a background on the two mycoplasmas, Mycoplasma hyorrhinus and Mycoplasma hyosynoviae, and then how they present in the field?
Both of the mycoplasmas are, people commonly think of them as a bacterial issue that affects joints, which they are. However, Mycoplasma hyorrhinus also can cause systemic symptoms. So fibrin, polycyrrhitis, pericarditis, it starts on very young pigs, and you tend to have a high prevalence in those pigs at an early age, and then can continue, those pigs continue to have that organism even up through until marketing or beyond. And the Mycoplasma hyosynoviae, that tends to be a little bit slower moving. But it does affect joints, cause lameness, and typically we'll see a higher prevalence of that in pigs that are closer to marketing or even adult swine.
And how about what do you see compared to other diseases? How do you kind of differentiate that it's not something else like that causes lameness? So tell us what you see kind of clinically looking at the pigs.
Sure. So when we're investigating, you know, is there some mycoplasma related lameness? So we would do a necropsy on those pigs, open up the joints. Typically with a mycoplasma hyosynoviae, we'll see a more red joint fluid, whereas a mycoplasma hyorhinus, it tends to be a clear type fluid. Also, we can test that. So we can send those samples into the diagnostic lab. We can do a PCR directly on the joint fluid. We can also do other tests, oral fluid tests. We can test tonsil swabs. Some of the tests are better than others. So with hyorhinus, the oral fluid is very good. Testing the joints directly is very good. But with mycoplasma hyosynoviae, the oral fluids isn't quite as good and sometimes may miss it. But testing the joint itself, generally you have better luck, or doing a tonsil swab as well would be another way to go.
So Steve, go ahead. You have some
to add. Deb, when you see it in young pigs, are these pigs in farrowing, or is this in the nursery, or a little bit of both?
A little bit of both. So a very small percentage tend to be positive on the sow. So you will have it there. Although usually you would have to look pretty hard to find it. So maybe 10% or less, you might find it on the sow. And once they get into the nursery, generally within the first couple weeks of placement, you know, they all share with their neighbors. So then you go from that 10%, typically up to 100%. Now there's different flows of pigs that can be different than that. And that might be a little bit delayed. But just more commonly, at least what we've found on our testing is that it does tend to be that first few weeks of the nursery, you will find it in high amounts and at high prevalence.
Why risk it? Your herd may have antigenic gaps that are not being covered by the products currently available. Custom-made vaccines provide a unique advantage in that they can be formulated to a herd's specific bacterial and viral needs. Choose the exact isolates, adjuvant, packaging and size you need with Vaxinova for a vaccine formulated to your needs. Find out more by visiting us at vaxinova.us.com. That's vaxinova.us.com.
So how about, let's dig into the diagnosis of these pathogens just a little bit more. So Deb, already you shared with us a little bit what we're seeing clinically and doing a necropsy. So how about trying to isolate the organism or, you know, get a confirmatory positive? And then we'll jump into, after that, we'll have Steve talk to us about, you know, sending samples in perhaps to make a vaccine.
So for an organism that can be so prevalent, it's actually a little bit tricky if you actually want to isolate it or grow it. So usually when we've done that, you have to be prepared, have a cooler, have ice. So when you go in and take those samples, you're getting them cooled down right away and getting them to the lab right away. Another thing that can be helpful with that is to take a swab of it. And sometimes it can kind of tends to survive a little bit better on the swab than it does otherwise. But either way, get it cooled off quickly and then get it to the lab right away. When it gets there, you want to request that they culture for mycoplasma right away, because as time goes on, if there's a delay in that, it tends to be harder to go back and get that to grow. And so that's something that the lab would want to know kind of ahead of time or on the form that when it's being submitted. In the past, if I wasn't confident, you know, which joint that might be in, because it is systemic, but sometimes on younger pigs you might find it more in a hock, and an older pig you might find it in a stifle. So what I would do is just remove the entire leg, so like dislocate that at the hip, and then that way the lab will have intact joints, multiple of them, that they can then open in a maybe a more sterile way than I can in the barn and get those samples that they need.
Steve, anything on the Vaxinova side to add to that?
Yeah, I would agree with everything that Deb has talked through. You know, sometimes the other piece that's important to remember in any diagnostic investigation is that it can take multiple submissions sometimes too, and resubmissions. Sometimes, especially in the world of mycoplasmas, we can fairly easily, depending on how bad the situation is in the farm, we can find the PCR positives relatively easy, but sometimes getting that culture positive can take a little bit of time. And for all the reasons that Dr. Deb just mentioned, all of that plays into whether or not we're successful. So if we're confident that we're working up and trying to chase down a hyorhinus, I often encourage people to be patient and be persistent and don't give up if we don't get that first isolate. And then, yeah, for us, sometimes even having multiple isolates helps as well, because as we can maybe talk about later here, as we move in towards vaccine development, sometimes we get isolates that grow pretty well in the laboratory, and then we'll have other isolates that maybe aren't as easy to grow. So sometimes even having just more than one Rhinus isolate in particular is important as we start to think through how do we want to manage and control the disease long term.
I would just add to that, if you're unsure of when you're going to have a high prevalence, so that might also help you is to do some preliminary testing to determine like when am I seeing the most of this? Because I think that's another reason why people can be unsuccessful is they might go in an early nursery peg looking for synovia, but in reality, there's a very, very low prevalence then. So it's going to be really hard to find. So I might want to do some maybe oral fluids or some preliminary testing just to see where those PCR positives are before I go and try to grow it, right? So I have my highest success rate. So kind of combining your clinical signs of your lameness or your polyserositis in the case of the hyorrhinus, and then also just when that peak prevalence is, so then you have your best shot at getting it.
Yeah, well said.
Yeah. Yep. So before we jump into treatment options and management options on controlling it, I want to ask a little bit about the losses, like kind of morbidity, mortality, and you know what you see a bit of the production losses for these two diseases, you know, compared to maybe other ones that we see in the field.
Yeah. And so that can be pretty variable. And of course, these, you know, today I would say if you don't have PERS with it, that's unusual. So, you know, there's such a high prevalence of PERS out there, especially if you're growing pigs in, you know, Minnesota or Iowa. And so with a primary pathogen like PERS, it really increases the losses of that would be associated with hyorrhinus as well, because it seems like it just really increases the shedding, increases the clinical severity. So without that, if your herd is unstable for it, you can see, you know, anywhere from 5% nursery mortality, you know, maybe plus. About half the time when you're looking for it, you'll find cases with GPS and hyorrhinus together. So it's typically not just one, right? So you have multiple pathogens kind of acting together, but then you combine that maybe with an influenza or with a PERS, and then you're going to really increase it from there. In some cases, you know, really, really severe high mortality, again, with PERS, but also with hyorrhinus as a kind of a number two, you know, primary or your number one secondary. With synovia, that tends to be a little clinically a little different because they're older pigs, bigger pigs, but your losses are more expensive then because you put all that money into that pig and you've, you know, grown it and gotten it to market, and then you're losing, you know, good big pigs, mid finishing, late finishing, or you're losing gilts and sows because we know that can continue on into the sow, and then you're having a really expensive loss because now she's bred and you're losing her and her litter. So I think it sort of kind of depends on a couple things, but I think the synovia ones, maybe that's an area that would be, you know, some more study would be beneficial to just really understand, like, what impact is that on the sows? Because I feel like that is an area that we don't have a really good handle on.
Along those lines on the hive synovia, Deb, I'm just kind of curious, do you have thoughts on or experiences, at least in the pigs you see, When do you think the hyosynovia infection actually occurs versus like when we see the manifestation of the clinical signs? Is there a difference in your mind on those two things? And again, how that maybe relates to diagnostics and control measures and that kind of thing?
I think there's a very small percentage that are getting colonized, you know, from the sow to pig transmission with synovia, but it tends to move so much slower. So it doesn't tend to be as widely prevalent as early. There seems to be more of a lag on them getting colonized and clinical disease. But I think that as you go through that disease process, I think that they are, you will have a as a bug load builds, if you will, in the barn, as you get a higher pathogen load. I think the time between colonization and disease is shortened, right? So like higher bug load, more disease, and more clinical signs.
Great. So let's jump into kind of what do we do about it, right, in the herd. So, Deb, what about treatment options or management options? What would you do to try to control these diseases when you diagnose them?
So that's a challenging question because most of the treatments are not great. So what our experience was, especially when we saw this disease early on, is that we could use therapies that were, you know, supposed to be effective against mycoplasmas, but unfortunately they have a hard time getting into the joint or the place where the infection is occurring, and you know, in systemically and or joint. And so the pigs would typically look a little bit better while they were on that water therapy or on that injectable treatment. But then unfortunately, as soon as that sort of wore off, kind of came back again. And it was a lot of treatments, a lot of repeated treatments, and the disease became very chronic for unfortunately for a lot of those animals. And so what we had discovered is that it was worked better to vaccinate those pigs and protect them that way, as well as the sows, and then combine that with some therapies to help stabilize the sow farm, just because the treatments in and of themselves weren't always that rewarding.
Yes. Steve, what about you? Anything to add?
Yeah, I would again echo all of those sentiments, you know, especially on the hyosynovia side of it, that the biggest challenge there is, you know, by the time those clinical signs show up and you've got all of that invested into those animals, and then you're pretty limited on what you can treat with, especially if you're bumping up against withdrawal periods before trying to market animals, it can minimize what's available to you pretty quickly. As coming from Vaxinova, we start to think about some of the vaccine options fairly quickly, right? Like, I think these make good pathogens to kind of think through how vaccines and preventative types of approaches really help manage the disease long term in population.
One question that I had is, you know, we talk about mycoplasma, hyopneumonia eradication programs and, you know, getting negative herds. So any discussion about that with these two mycoplasmas? Anybody try it and be successful?
I'm not aware of anyone that has been. So even though you'd use the same medications or same treatments, right, because they're all mycoplasmas, but I'm not aware of any mycoplasma hyopneumonia eradication that's also successfully eradicated Hyorhinus or Synoviae. So unfortunately, they kind of tend to hang out a little bit longer and are a little tougher to get rid of. So they're tricky.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, the medications don't get to that area in high concentrations, I think, for a good, you know, pathogen kill, right? And then they're kind of insidious early, and they can be a slow spread in a herd. And so, you know, the eradication programs that we use on, we know when the animals got infected, it doesn't work quite as well with these two diseases. So, all right. So let's jump into, just give us a feel for, you work for a large production company, 60,000 sows, and, you know, how do you see these disease present in a production company, and how do they affect your day-to-day operations?
Yeah. So the Hyorhinus, I guess I'll start with that. So that we saw that on young pigs, early nursery, you know, lots of swollen joints, kind of this weird wrinkly skin we would see along with that. We would also see the fibrin, the polyserositis, pericarditis. It's really difficult, you know, to get like, you know, no flu and no PERS, right? So anytime you have any of those secondaries, that would definitely make that a lot worse. So we typically see it early. Our strategy that we use was to, because we would see, we knew that 10% of them were getting colonized or around that or less on the sow, we knew that it was difficult to get a vaccination in early, like enough, right? Because there's always going to be some that are going to be likely infected, even if we vaccinate at process and then weaning, you know, we need 2 weeks after that for that vaccine to really work. Well, by then we might have 100% of them already colonized. So how do we get a jump on that? So we chose to do a pre-farrow vaccination just to help increase immunity, reduce shedding on those sows, hopefully reduce that percentage down, you know, down to 1% maybe or less, and then also increase immunity, clostridial immunity for those pigs to buy us a chance or give us some time to have our process and wean vaccine work for them. So that was kind of our strategy that we used. If the herd is very unstable, you might have to combine that maybe with a antibiotic treatment just to reduce that colonization or help them kind of get through that, again, allowing time for your vaccine to work. On the synovial side, I think that one is a great question. I think there's still a lot of work that needs to be done on what's the best timing. You know, is it, it tends to be, you know, the thought process is maybe it's a later colonizer. And if we vaccinate too early, it doesn't work and you need to push your vaccine out a little bit farther. But I think there's still a lot of questions in that regard. And part of the difficulty with both of these is that there really isn't a good ELISA or antibody test for them. So if we're trying to study this and determine, you know, when mom's antibodies are wearing off and when pigs are getting their own, we just don't have a good way of doing that. So that makes all of these things a lot harder to study and determine. And so, yeah, so the synovial one, I think, definitely needs more work to really know that for sure. And I know there's been some people that have looked into it, but I don't think there's been any real clear-cut answers yet.
Yeah, Steve, have some more?
Yeah, I would, again, not a whole lot to add there. You know, hit a lot of the important concepts right on the head there. Of course, anytime we vaccinate, we need to make sure we get the vaccine in before the infection is occurring, right? Give that vaccine the best chance. And so working into that and trying to figure out, especially if a herd is unstable, how do you get things under control enough to make a vaccine effective? And Dr. Murray pointed out a couple of different options that are out there, right, to get things stabilized to the point where that can help. You know, the other couple of things that can be really challenging to study with these bugs is, unlike PRRS or unlike strep, where we maybe have a good challenge model worked out, where we actually know how to infect pigs with PRRS and we know how to infect pigs with strep. And that allows us a really nice way to study the vaccine and study the effects of the vaccine. Unfortunately, with Hyorhinus and Hyosynovia, we don't have that same ability. The challenge models for these bugs are just not well established. And so we're oftentimes left with kind of large observational studies and just kind of some before and after experiences, which can take a lot of time and investment to get confident enough in whatever you're doing. And there was a study published by a PhD student at the University of Minnesota with Maria Peters, looking at several different kind of vaccination protocols. And I would agree that data is probably not entirely conclusive as to what's the best way to utilize the vaccine. But again, these are large field studies and it's hard to manage all the unknown variables. And so oftentimes what we hear is, you know, people that work hard on a vaccine, getting good isolate that grows and working on a good vaccine, get and stay patient with it long enough to try to figure out the nuances, can see some real benefit to it over time. But it's a much less clear pathway than maybe what we would think about for other bacterial diseases.
And I guess one thing I would add to that too, what we've seen is that for Hyorhinus, it does seem to be, if you have a isolate, it tends to protect against others. So even if you might have more than one Hyorhinus in your system, you know, maybe you have two different pig flows and they are a little bit different, it seems like one works. And whereas I don't know if we know the answer on that on synovial, I don't know if we know how many different isolates there are or how different they are, or even how to compare them. So that one is another one that's kind of a further study as needed area.
That's exactly right. I mean, we have some pretty sensitive tools now with next generation sequencing and whole genome sequencing that really allow us to dig into those bugs, but still not exactly always sure what those little differences mean.
AB Vista, an innovative animal nutrition company offering intelligent solutions for the swine industry. The combination of innovative products, technical expertise, and cutting-edge services provide the ideal tools to drive pig production. To learn more about AB Vista tools, check abvista.com.
Yeah, Steve, you mentioned Dr. Maria Peters and a lot of the work, pioneering work that she did on the mycoplasmas at University of Minnesota. And one thing I recall, way back a while ago on Mycoplasma pneumoniae, she did some work on maternal antibody interference. Is there any? Can we vaccinate pigs, you know, young and vaccinate sows, Deb, like you said, pre-farrow? Any work done on these two bugs in that regard?
Again, tough. These are always the really tough ones to answer without, you know, the solid challenge model in place.
Yeah.
The recent study conducted, Haley Schwecke was the PhD or master student that was running this study, she was trying to answer this with all these different combinations of sow vaccines and piglet vaccines. And, you know, I really applaud that effort. It was a monumental undertaking, but when it gets right down to it, it's hard to, you know, to keep track of everything and all the confounding variables that pop up in a field study. But yeah, absolutely. The role of maternal antibodies should be considered. We know from other bugs that we've looked at on the autogenous side that there are mechanisms through the development of vaccines and the formulation of vaccines. We can overcome some of that maternal antibody hurdles. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's maybe not as well understood or defined on the mycoplasma side today.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I would add to that on the hyorrhinus side is that we know that the mycoplasma hyorrhinus can change surface antigens to evade the immune system. And so, and maybe this is related to that, or maybe it's not, but what we had found is the timing of the vaccine was very, very critical. And in our system, we found that three different doses, essentially 2 weeks apart on each dose, would work the best. And that third dose, if that was delayed, and that would, let's say it was given 4 weeks after the second dose instead of two, the pigs essentially acted unvaccinated. So there's something specific about that timing, and maybe it has to do with the mycoplasma organism itself. I don't know. But I think that can be a challenge. And so it can certainly be an area of frustration when you're putting in a vaccine and you think you have everything in place and then, man, it just doesn't work. And I would say if that's the case, I would challenge you to look at your timing and look at, you know, maybe the antigen load of the vaccine. You know, all of those things are pieces that might be critical, that might not be quite where they need to be in order to make it work. But it can work, but I think you just have to be willing to go jump through the hoops to find that right timing for your situation.
Deb, in the case of lateral spread within a system for these bugs, do you ever try to manage pig flow within the system with respect to these bugs, or is it still more focused around PRRS or influenza, or does maybe in the gills more than anything, does mycoplasma play into the management strategy?
So I think anytime you change your gilt source, you're really opening yourselves up for a can of worms. So there's always subtle differences, nuances, even though they seem very similar, they generally are not. And it might be hyorrhinus, it might be other little bugs that could be different in this different gilt source. And that definitely will flare things up. So we would always start with vaccinating gilts and getting our multipliers stable, and then continuing to then vaccinate the commercial farms to again, kind of continue that stability immunity for hyorrhinus and synovia as well. But I do think that you have to go back that far. And if you don't, I think there's a real struggle. We've also seen some effects even on conception rates, on gilts that are very unstable for this. And we had a farm that had seasoned breeders and they had never had a problem in the past and then introduced a new gilt source that had a hyorrhinus in it that farm had not experienced before. And all of a sudden they could not get their gilts to conceive and tried and were really frustrated and then looked into it. And sure enough, that's what we discovered, is that it was a hyorrhinus. And then once we got the vaccine in place and the multiplier, you know, medicated and treated, their conception rates came right back up and fell into line. So I think it can affect more than just lameness, but I guess that was one example of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to ask you, you took my next question on any, you know, seeing any kind of reproductive effects or any long lasting effects in gilts. And so I think understanding some more of these knowledge gaps that we just talked about, right, will hopefully over time help us understand a little bit the economic impacts of these mycoplasma pathogens and then maybe how to control them a little bit better.
I would say on that too, you know, if you look at your causes of mortality in your sow farm, lameness is right up there, right? That's a very, very high cause of mortality or sow death loss. And so for sure, if you have hyorrhinus or hyosynoviae, I would say that's very likely to be playing a role in that lameness. You know, other things too, right? We know we have OCD, we have erysipelas, we have other pathogens, so you've got to rule all those out. But yes, I would say that definitely has an impact on your cell burn and your cell mortality too.
So we're finishing our discussion today on Mycoplasma hyorhinus and Mycoplasma hyosynoviae, how to diagnose these pathogens in the field, how to manage the infection, and some of the knowledge gaps that we have really still with these pathogens to understand them better. I've got Dr. Deb Murray, Dr. Steve Tusana with me. And if you have questions or comments for our guests, send them over on your podcast platform. If you like our show, please give us a thumbs up. But before we wrap up, let's maybe get some final thoughts and take homes. And if there's something that we maybe I didn't ask you guys to add before we end. So Deb, got some final take homes for the group?
Yeah, I would just say, if you're interested in learning more about them, feel free to reach out to me. If I didn't, already explain something well enough or you have further questions, our situation might be a little bit different than yours, but, there's generally a lot of similarities in that. So I'm sure we can learn something from each other. On the synoviae front, I think that would be a great area, like we've already discussed a couple times, to do more work on transmission routes. We didn't talk a lot about that, but, we've even kind of questioned lately whether or not maybe semen could be a way that this could be transmitted. It's difficult to know that because obviously there's a lot of herds that are already positive. So if you have a new synoviae that's introduced, maybe in a boar stud and the semen would bring it in, I don't know that anyone would be suspicious of that because we're not necessarily looking. So I think there's lots of areas of opportunity and hopefully some good projects to come in the years ahead.
Yeah. How about you, Steve? Some final take homes?
Yeah, just anything we can ever do to help, right, on the diagnostic side of it and helping to obtain good isolates. Got some good experiences with vaccines. I think they, are a good viable tool in the toolbox that people can look at. But it starts with, understanding where the bugs are in the system and how to get our hands on them. And yeah, I would be more than happy if anybody had questions, feel free to reach out.
Yeah, and I can say that I personally have had some time with Deb understanding these pathogens in the field, and we've spent we've had many discussions about how different they can be and how different age they can present, and how some herds it's a real big issue and other herds it's not as big of an issue, and certainly the cofactors that can go along with everything's going well and then you get a PRRS break and now you all of a sudden have Mycoplasma hyorhinus too. So thanks for sharing, Deb, all your experiences and helping us learn together out in the field, and appreciate your openness to help everybody, get better.
Yeah, great.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Vaxinova, formulate to your needs, custom-made vaccines. Nexus, powered by SAM, where science meets performance. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions. Uniferon 200 from Pharmacosmos, the iron dextrin for baby pigs, which promotes faster growth. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost pig health and performance. In swine production, performance is everything. At Lupta, we know your success depends on measurable results. That's why our feed additives go beyond improving palatability. They're scientifically designed to enhance feed intake, support animal well-being, and drive optimal growth. From the wean transition to periods of stress, our solutions deliver what matters most: resilient animals, improved performance, and a stronger bottom line. Backed by decades of expertise and a commitment to innovation, Lupta is redefining swine nutrition. Because when your herd thrives, so does your business. Lupta, create, connect, inspire. Visit Lupta.com to learn more.
Well, excellent. So now we have the hallmark of our show is we ask our guests three questions just to get to know them a little bit more and to share with our audience some, different ways, different resources and things that we can look into. So Deb, tell us, what is your favorite book or resource in your area of expertise, kind of your go-to?
Yeah, so I'm sure this has been a common answer, but I would say Diseases of Swine. So it's, you know, it's one of those books that sort of has everything, and you find a new pathogen. And for me, at one time, Hyorhinus was a new pathogen. You know, I didn't know a lot about it. I hadn't learned about it in vet school. And I looked in diseases of swine, and sure enough, there it was. And they explained all about it. And I was like, wow, this is great. So yeah, I would say diseases of swine probably is my most resourced resource.
That's been my answer on several of these previous ones too. Yep. It's a good one.
It's kind of funny. You can compare, you know, sort of when veterinarians graduated based on the color of their diseases of swine book on their bookshelf. So yeah, it's definitely our gold standard. So Deb, what about your favorite book or resource outside vet med?
Oh gosh. You know, so I, outside of VetMed, usually just listen to audiobooks more to relax and kind of take my mind off of work, which I think is actually pretty important too. And sometimes it's in those relaxing times, or, you know, maybe you're outside gardening and doing whatever, and all of a sudden something just comes to you that might have actually been a solution for something at work that you weren't thinking of. So I think it's kind of a good idea to have those times that are, again, maybe not thinking a whole lot or not really work related, but just something, you know, listening for relaxation or whatnot.
Yep. It's kind of subconscious thinking, right? It's still going on, but you're thinking about something else. And yeah, I've definitely had that experience, and that's good advice. Everybody works pretty hard at what they do. So our last question is, share with us an attribute or characteristic that you feel sets successful professionals apart from others.
I would say for that, it's got to be having a high expectation. So I think that swine vets in general, you know, hard workers, dedicated, but I think they have a high expectation of themselves, and therefore have a high expectation of their job. You know, we're unfortunately or fortunately, we're expected to solve problems, right? So, you know, we can diagnose it, that's great, but really at the end of the day, we want to fix it. So I think having that high expectation, I think, is really something that's in your career. I think you always need to keep that. And I think that definitely sets us apart.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. I don't think I've had that one before, but I definitely agree. All right. Well, thank you both for being on the show. Look forward to the next time.
All right. Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.